giving them a platform, giving them exposure to say, hey, here's my story. You don't want to be like me. You want to really look at the prevention piece. So then you're not in that phase where you're now managing your disease.
Hey there, I'm Siobhan Reed, your guide here on Future Health Now, where we're all about advocating for health equity and generational wellness starting today. If you're a public health professional, a parent, or a community leader concerned about the well-being of our next generation, then you are in the right place. A great way to plug into this community is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at futurehealthnow.com, where we'll keep you informed about upcoming events, educational content, and ways to stay engaged. I firmly believe your future health is determined by the actions you take now. OPUA stands for Optimistic People Unified for Awareness, and we are committed to helping others make behavioral changes for better health. So I'm thrilled you'll be spending time with me today, diving into this content with me, and tuned in to hear the amazing wisdom coming from our guests. Today, you'll get to tune into a conversation I had with Tamara Moon, who is a brilliant health equity strategist and socialpreneur who champions both health equity and philanthropy by paying it forward through social impact work. She's the founder and CEO of To the Moon and Back Foundation. Tamara is devoted to causes that elevate her community, including mentoring the next generation of public health leaders. Tamara is devoted to causes that elevate her community, including mentoring the next generation of public health leaders. She will share with us the first time she discovered health equities and how we can translate health equity goals into reality. All right, let's pick up the conversation where I asked her, when was the earliest memory of thinking about health inequities she experienced or saw in the world around her? Enjoy. Hi, Tamara, how are you?
I am wonderful, excited to chat with you.
I know. Oh my gosh. I just want to jump right in and find out, like, what is your earliest memory of thinking about health inequities that you either experienced or you saw in the world around you?
Yes, I would say actually growing up in Lorain, Ohio, that's where Toni Morrison is from. And just being around family members, I don't think I realized it at the time, but I grew up with a cousin who had type 1 diabetes. So, you know, I was always by his side, just seeing him take his insulin. And then I had an older cousin and he developed diabetes type 2 later on in life. And he was getting his limbs amputated and just seeing what he went through. And then I also had an uncle who had prostate cancer. And at that time, there was really nothing they could do for him. And I just remember him, you know, when he would urinate, just like yelling because he was in so much pain. So just seeing all this within my family and then transitioning to Ohio State, there was like this invisible wall between the greater community and the campus community. And so as a graduate student, I came up with this idea to do a minority fitness and health professional career fair. So every first Saturday in spring quarter, we would do this great event at our student union for 4 consecutive years. We had over 500 attendees, not only from campus, but also the greater Columbus community. And we will offer health screenings. We will have students, nursing students, optometry students, medical students actually have an opportunity to apply everything they were learning in class. And then we would have student organizations come and they would do everything from double dutch to wushu to belly dance. And we would just have a great time. We would host the largest blood drive. And so the Red Cross, they were always excited about this event. So that's when I really saw just the health equities that existed. You know, reading about it in class, it was one thing, but actually seeing it in person, it was like, okay, I got to do something. So that's where I remember seeing all the health equities.
Yes. And so it seems like there's a lot of things that really shaped your worldviews about it. But what is that one thing that just really touched you and made you know, okay, I need to study my MPH at The Ohio State University?
The one thing is just like, again, just seeing everything that happened in my small town. It was a steel mill town. So my grandparents, they moved from Bessemer, Alabama to Ohio for a better life. And, you know, if you wanted a better life, you work at the steel mill, you work a great job, you get a great earning. And people are actually passing of what they call black lung disease. So there were a lot of widows whose husbands unfortunately passed away because, yes, they're having great earnings, but their environment that was really impacting their health. And so that was just like really eye-opening to me and just felt like they gave the families money, but you really couldn't replace that life. You couldn't say, oh, here's your husband back. Now you're in a household, you're a single mother raising your children. But that was like something that really, really just resonated with me and I wanted to do something about it.
Yeah, I can't even imagine life without my husband. So my heart goes out to anyone who becomes a widow at any point. So what has been the more challenging or more challenging than you expected as you've been striving to make this positive impact in the world?
I would say politics over people. You see that all the time in healthcare, just working with the healthcare system. Yes, it's about making money. It's about filling the beds, but at the same time, just not really thinking about the people living in Georgia. It's a tobacco state. So just not increasing the tax for tobacco because people are farmers. So again, you're putting all these politics over people's lives and over their health. And I just think that's just terrible. So that's the biggest thing I wasn't ready for. We really didn't talk about that when I was getting my master's in public health. And so it's something that you start working and, you know, I worked for nonprofits, I worked for healthcare systems, and I worked for government. And so just really seeing that up front, it's like, how do you deal with this? Because, you know, there's all these boundaries, it's all this red tape. You have to realize, okay, I need to keep my job, but at the same time, I have this burning passion to address this issue. And sometimes your hands are tied. So sometimes you can't do it as Tamara representing XYZ organization. You have to do it as Tamara, the citizen. So that's something I wasn't prepared for, but I learned how to work through that system.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting that you say that because I just heard a commercial yesterday when I was driving home about that very thing. And it's like something that you just don't really think about and it's not top of mind, but it's such a complex issue just around all of that, right? Now, why don't you think people see this as a public health issue?
Because I don't think they really practice value-based healthcare, putting people at the center of care. So we can look at COVID as a perfect example. It took everything from the passing of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, COVID, I call it the double pandemic, for people to really pay attention to the social determinants of health, to the health disparities, and it shined this bright light. So now you start seeing all these positions popping up from corporate America and just other entities where we're talking about health equity now. So it's almost a blessing in disguise, but it needed to happen. And I think it's a very exciting time for public health, especially for students, because it's like, okay, this is what public health is really about. A lot of people don't even know what public health is. And so this is also a time for education and the whole prevention piece. And the one thing that really bothered me was we're talking about essential workers. And a lot of those people were people who had to work two jobs just to get a decent pay. And, you know, you're telling these people, oh, you have preventative health care. You know, why don't you go get a mammogram? Why don't you get all these preventive services? But they can't even take the day off of work. And you're calling them essential, but they don't have essential pay. So that was really eye-opening. And, you know, again, COVID really shined that light on the problem.
Yes, and my heart goes out to those essential workers and just low-income individuals in general are those that feel like they can't prioritize their health and well-being because they have to keep their jobs. I know my mom definitely struggled with that. And with this uptick in, we are trying to level the playing grounds and just really induce this more equal level playing field. What are some of the things that you feel like public health professionals and communicators can do better to confront this reality?
They definitely need to give the community a seat at the table. A lot of times when we're planning all of these public health initiatives, we're not talking to the target audience. So we come up with these great ideas and then we try to implement them and then they fail. And it's like, all you had to do was invite the community, do a focus group, hear from them. And also when you're thinking about the relationships patients have with their doctors, it's really not that healthy relationship where they're listening to the patient. Yes, I totally respect physicians, nurses, healthcare professionals, but at the same time, your patients, they know their body's the best. And sometimes we're not hearing them. And so I think that's a big thing that we really have to focus on. But yeah.
And every year in April, we have what's designated as Public Health Week. And so I know the American Public Health Association does a really good job of trying to invite others to be a part of that community and that conversation. So I would encourage any public health or health communications expert or thought leader to just join those forums and have that opportunity to join the table and assert yourselves and your voice.
Yes. And that's interesting you mentioned April because it's also Minority Health Month. So in Ohio, I remember working, and Ohio actually was one of the states that started Minority Health Month. And I would go around doing site visits. And it was just amazing what the community would do. Going to a church and they come up with this recipe book with local members being able to share family recipes, but then we will put a twist on it and make sure they were healthy. So I also think that's a great month to just really celebrate diversity and just really looking at those social determinants of health and all the health disparities and how do we turn that around and make it more about prevention.
Yes. And now let's take that a step further. When you see all these public health initiatives playing out, right, at the micro level within our underserved communities, both positively and negatively, how have you seen that like really make some change?
Again, I'm going to go back to just giving, I like to call them thrivers a voice instead of survivors, but just letting them tell their story. I think a lot of times we don't put a face to all of these health conditions. So just giving them a platform, giving them exposure to say, hey, here's my story. You don't want to be like me. You want to really look at the prevention piece. So then you're not in that phase where you're now managing your disease. So again, just really giving a face and a voice to those thrivers.
Now, have you been able to find joy and continued hope for our future amid all the issues we face through the pandemic, the glaring inequities, the injustices, the wartime?
Yes, definitely. I think this is really a time for public health to shine as a profession. You have more students actually pursuing their master's of public health degrees. And I always say to my students, I said, I learned from you guys as much as you learned from me because it's been a minute since I graduated. And they have all of these great just access to different technology, everything from Canva and just really having technology at the forefront of public health. And I just think it's a great marriage. So when I look at the students, I can see the hope, I can see the joy. And I think also just really not overcomplicating things. Even with COVID, we tried to make it it was a big deal, but how did you deliver the message to really talk to your circle of influence? And so my father, unfortunately, he just got diagnosed with COVID. And he texted me and he said, thank God for that vaccination. And I will say he was one of the latecomers. It wasn't like he was running in line with his hand raised saying, you know, I want to get vaccinated. And all I would say is, it's not about if you get COVID, it's when you get it. And I didn't realize how that resonated with my circle of friends because I had one friend, he's like, yeah, I got vaccinated. And I was like, what made you get vaccinated? He said, I remember what you said. And I was like, oh, wow. So they are listening. So I think the younger generation, they understand how to just make it simple, how to make public health relatable to their circle of influence, to their friends, to their family, and not that preaching. You know, yes, you want to advocate for public health, but just really just make it simple.
Wow. Well, you're definitely an influencer. I know that you have had a lot of influence on all the people that are within your small circle, but I would like to have this community be able to follow you as well because you're putting out great articles on LinkedIn on how to cope with all these issues and things. And so can you tell us how they can follow you?
Yes. So definitely go on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find. Just look for my name. And also for my foundation's website, it's ttmab.org. And that's the best way to get in contact with me. But yes, just thank you for this opportunity. Again, this was very exciting and it's a great platform just to share about public health.
Yes, awesome. I really appreciate you being here. Is there any one question that you wished I had asked that I didn't?
I think you hit everything. It was just a nice, genuine, authentic discussion. So yes, thank you so much, Siobhan.
Well, I really appreciate you being here, and I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation and watching all the great work you're doing.
Thank you. And continue to do what you're doing.
Thank you. That's a wrap to another edition of Future Health Now. We're incredibly grateful for the opportunity to serve you with this content and want to stay connected. The best way to do this is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at futurehealthnow.com. While you're there, we want to hear your feedback and make sure you feel this community is a resource that helps you feel best equipped for the public health education journey, one that you'll be proud to be a part of, and share the content with others so we can empower the healthiest, well-informed human population in history. If you haven't already rated the show on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcast, please simply tap the number of stars you feel this show deserves. This helps to get this content in front of more people and, again, gauge how we can continually add more value to this community. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the help from our executive producer and production team at Chat with Leaders Media. If you're looking to launch your very own B2B growth podcast in the industry you serve, go to chatwithleaders.com. Now go enjoy a healthy, encouraging, and joy-filled day.